The Life of General Belisarius, Italy After Belisarius, Part 1. Now, the reduction of Puerto by the barbarians and the consequent loss of maritime convoys were supplied by his providential care in such sowing an ample harvest within the Roman walls, denoting that large tracts of desolate and open ground existed within the city of Rome. Several assaults of the Gothic army were repulsed, and Rome might have prolonged its defense, however uselessly, for a considerable time, had not some of the Isaurian soldiers unfortunately recollected with how much liberty the former treachery of their comrades was rewarded. At their instigation, Totila, at an appointed night, embarked some Gothic trumpeters in two boats on the Tiber, with orders to approach as closely as possible to the Roman walls, and draw the attention of the garrison with a loud flourish of their instruments. When the soldiers appointed to watch the ramparts rushed to that quarter where they heard the sound and where they expected an attack, the gate of St. Paul was opened to the army of Totila by the perfidious Isaurians. Surprised and dismayed, Byzantine troops fled towards Civita Vecchia, the only fortress which still was retained in the neighboring country. But Totila, having foreseen that their retreat would take place in this direction, had stationed an ambush on the road. The greater part of the garrison fell in the skirmish which ensued, and Diogenes was disabled by a wound and could hardly escape with a handful of survivors. 400 other soldiers sought sanctuary in the churches, where they were protected by the compassion or the piety of Totila, and an equal number, headed by Paul the Sicilian, a veteran officer of Belisarius, maintained the tomb of Hadrian. This massive pile had, as we've seen, already served as a tower and bulwark on the outer wall, but this is the earliest of many instances when it answered the purpose as a citadel and continued to hold out after the city around it was subdued. It had been designed for this object by Totila, and at the time he had demolished a large share of the city wall, he had, on contrary, built one along the side where this monument was unprotected by the outer rampart, so as to render it defensible in every quarter. As, however, the Goths never made the slightest resistance in this place when the city was entered by the Byzantines, it seems probable that the structure had merely been commenced and that it's afterwards completed by the care of Belisarius, a project whence the inventor had never drawn any advantage or support, was now turned against himself. An assault of the victorious Gauls was repulsed by Paul the Sicilian, but the want of provisions hindered his troops from sustaining a long blockade, and their horror of horseflesh urged them to attempt a headlong and almost hopeless sally. Dreading the disastrous effects of their despair, Totila proposed them to return to Constantinople, forfeiting the possessions of their steeds and their weapons, or retaining it by enlisting in his service. They accepted the first alternative, but ashamed of proceeding homeward unarmed and despoiled, and the tempting offer of regular payments afterwards determined the greater number of his troops went to the second choice. In his treatment of the Roman citizens on this occasion, Totila displayed great clemency and moderation. The few senators still confined in their Campanian prisons were reinstated in their former homes. Private buildings, which his late animosity had leveled to the ground, were rapidly restored at his command, and the magazines of provisions were appointed for the use of the returning population. The Gothic monarch himself presided at the celebration of equestrian games in the amphitheater, from which the Romans still retained their hereditary fondness. But all these employments could hardly distract Totila from the prosecution of the war. Above 400 vessels were collected to transport his troops to Sicily, and while some Gothic detachments entered Taranto and Rimini, the king at the head of his principal forces was reducing Reggio. From thence he passed over in the Sicily, where the Byzantine garrison of Syracuse, Messina, and Palermo appeared alone to have withstood his arms, and he wreaked his long-deferred resentment upon the islanders by pillaging the lesser cities and the devastation of the open country. Such success emboldened him to undertake more distant enterprises. A small squadron subdued with great ease the islands of Corsica and Sardinia. A fleet of 300 sail conveyed a barbarian army to lay waste to the opposite shores of the Adriatic. But the Goths were unskilled in maritime warfare, and the growing strength of their navy was checked and broken by a defeat near the Battle of Ancona, when no more than 11 galleys out of 47 managed to escape. During these transactions, which occupied a space of 4 years, from 548 to 552 AD, Justinian viewed at first the loss of Italy without concern. His zeal against the Arians was, however, artfully inflamed by Pope Vigilius, and he consented to renew the Gothic War, yet as formerly, he provided no sufficient forces, and his rapid revocation of generals clearly marks his feeble and vacillating judgment. After selecting his nephew Germanicus, he suddenly changed in favor of Liberius, a civilian so unfitted to command by the infirmities of age and the want of experience in the field. No sooner had the new general sailed for Sicily when he was replaced by Artaban, who in turn yielded to Germanicus, appointed for the second time. Great expectations were entertained of the latter. His former victories over the Sclavonian invaders and rebels in Africa were remembered. His flight from Antioch, however, was forgotten, such as the favor shown to princes, and his marriage with the Mathsotha gave him friends and partisans among the Goths themselves. But all these hopes were disappointed by his early death, and his son Justinian, who with John the Sanguinary succeeded him as joint commanders, were soon afterwards removed. The emperor now cast his eyes upon Narses, whose ambition for military honors had not cooled during the 12 years of inactivity or of diplomatic employment, but whose judgment was not dazzled by the tempting proposal. The late example of Belisarius clearly showed the inefficiency of the greatest personal exertions when unsupported by sufficient forces or money, and Narses resolutely declined the direction of the war unless he received such supplies, both of men and money, as might enable him to conduct it with advantage to his country and to glory himself. This favor, which the hero had solicited in vain, was granted to the courtier. The public treasury was placed at his disposal. Large sums were laid aside to tempt the fidelity of deserters from the Gothic standards, and while payment of arrears gratified the ancient soldiers, the liberality of Narses attracted new. Albion, king of the Lombards, was induced by great presents to execute a former treaty with the empire, and he dispatched as auxiliaries 2,500 of his bravest soldiers, besides more than 3,000 of less note. A squadron of Persian refugees was collected, levies were made in Thrace and Illyria, and the Byzantine standards were joined by 300 Herulean horsemen, to whom Narses had particularly endeared himself by his former largesse in Italy. The total number of the troops assembled is not recorded, but cannot be estimated at less than 30,000 men. And while the preceding Byzantine armies in this war, from their extreme inferiority of numbers, had on no occasion been enabled to encounter Totila in open country and accept the battle which he was constantly offering, we find that the forces of Narses greatly exceeded that which his antagonist could muster. Thus the advantage of numbers was suddenly taken from the Goths. So we see that Justinian finally decides to provide troops and money. If he had done this for Belisarius, things would have gone along just fine. But, you know, that's Justinian. Can't figure out what's going on. But there are several parts to this, so there's quite a bit to come on what happened in Italy after Belisarius left. Now, the sources for this, The Wars of Justinian by Procopius, Short History of Byzantium by Norwich, Byzantine Art of War by Decker, Byzantine Army 324 to 1453 by Turnbull, and The Life of Belisarius by Mahome. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.